Yeah, this is a report on Central Equatoria, especially in the region of Yei, and it is about what we have monitored between September 2018 and April 2019. So we were able to document 95 incidents, including 30 attacks on villages, and we know that according to us, there is at least 104 civilians who were killed and 35 others who were injured. And this is really related to the incidents that we have monitored during that period. There were also a number of other civilians, 187, who were abducted for purposes as such as forced recruitment, forced labor, or sexual slavery. So we also observed some looting and destruction of private and public properties, and this was also documented. So the violence in Central Equatoria has led to the displacement also of a huge number of people within South Sudan. According to us, it's around 56,000 individuals, and also almost 20,000 who were displaced to DRC or Uganda.
All right. And then how many women and children were affected during this finding?
According to our figures and our monitoring, we at least 99 women and girls, and some of them were really very young, like 12 years old, and they were raped, and they were also subjected to other forms of sexual violence. So in some cases, we also observed that women and girls were abducted and held as sexual slaves, and which is of course not acceptable. So this is really a very difficult situation for women and girls in Central Equatoria.
And now, who were the perpetrators of these attacks, and what was the nature of the abuses?
We found that there were three main categories of perpetrators. Government armed forces, this is the first category. Non-signatory opposition armed groups, such as NAS, but also the South Sudan National Movement for Change. And the third category is the SPLA IO Pro Marshall. So this is the three main groups, and what they did could amount to war crimes. So according to us, the violence may be divided in two main phases. The first one is between September and December. An organized group were responsible for the majority of the abuses that were committed during that time, and they fought over territorial control after the signing of the peace agreement. These clashes during that period led to a lot of killing, at least 50 civilians. And this phase was also marked by significant abduction of civilians for forced recruitment, forced labor, and in some cases sexual slavery again. But we observe that in the second phase, which really is started around early January, government forces step up operation in the area around Yei, and these operations primarily targeted areas where civilians were perceived to be providing support to NAS and affiliated groups, and that's how they were targeted. And our investigation found that government forces appear to have engaged in a deliberate effort to displace civilians through attacks against on villages, which they achieved in part through the looting and destruction also of private property, such as homes, food supplies, crops, as well as public property, including health centers, schools, and churches.
And what did ANMIS do to respond to this situation?
Besides the investigation that we have conducted to find out what has really happened, there were a lot of action that were conducted by ANMIS. So first of all, some of the auditors maybe don't know, ANMIS has opened a permanent base in Yei. And we have deployed additional troops in Yei to protect civilians. And there is also two human rights officers who were deployed in Yei. And we also, as ENMIS, conduct a number of regular patrols within Ye Town and also outlining communities in Central Equatoria. And we monitor the human rights situation so that we can also deter violence through those patrols. And it's also enabled the safe delivery of humanitarian assistance and to support peace-building activities. But ENMIS as a whole, through especially the efforts of advocacy aid force and the good offices of the SRG, ENMIS has also continuously engaged with all the parties to the conflict in Central Equatoria to address the findings of the mission's investigation, and also to urge the parties to respect the cessation of hostilities agreement as well as their obligation under international human rights and humanitarian law. I was with the SIG when he went to Ye to see all the parties to the conflict, the IO, the government and others. And he went there with the IGAD Special Envoy and with the acting chair of JEMEC. And it was really a very fruitful visit. And he met also civil society organization and community leaders, as well as churches, the representative of the churches.
And Mr. Eugene, looking at the documentation of this report regarding the perpetrators, now what can be done so that these perpetrators are held to account?
As I said earlier, we have identified three categories of perpetrators with command responsibility. This is important to highlight that because from our own perspective, sometimes we like to only arrest when we arrest few of them, but we always focus on the small soldiers. And it is important to look at their command responsibility. So the various armed groups and could begin by investigating the role of their commanders so that they can really take a concrete action to stop this kind of violence. And as you know, the government has the primary responsibility to protect civilians and uphold the rule of law. And they can prosecute and they should prosecute perpetrators before a civilian or a military tribunal. It's also very important to hold any individual with command responsibility to account for what the person has done. But to date, unfortunately, we have seen far too little accountability among the ranks of officers in South Sudan. So it's really important to make sure that everybody who is involved in committing such atrocity should be held accountable. But in the longer term, as we know, there is really a need to see more political will at the highest level to establish the Abri Court, because it is through the Abri Court and other accountability measures that those people will be held accountable. And it is important if you want to have a sustainable peace in South Sudan. So we have seen some progress with like the mobile courts in Bentiu and Malakal. We are going to establish even a CRSV, a conflict-related sexual violence special court. But I think it is really important to make sure that we have a more sustainable, sustained and coherent approach to ensuring accountability in South Sudan.
And are there any other recommendations in the report that you would like to highlight?
Of course, because at the end of the day, we are focusing on human rights, but the human rights situation is also related to the overall situation in the country. So the first recommendation is, of course, to ask for all the parties to respect their obligations under international human rights law and humanitarian law, to refrain from arming civilians, and to hold the perpetrators of violation and abuses accountable for their action. It is also important to make sure that all the reports that we are trying to release, and the recommendation in particular, should be implemented. And if you are looking at all the reports that we have produced, the recurrence of conflict-related sexual violence is really one of the topics. And it is important to make sure that this conflict-related sexual violence should stop in the mission. I'm happy that SSPDF has released their action plan, and we have conducted a number of activities in a number of states to implement the SSPDF action plan at the various level. So, and I've also acknowledged even yesterday or the day before yesterday in Leer, there was also a training of a workshop like that, and it was important to hear a senior SSPDF officer to acknowledge that some cases were happening and that it was not acceptable, and they should take action to make sure that those who were involved in those conflict-related sexual violence are going to be held accountable.
Right. And Mr. Eugene, taking you back to the cases of rape that you documented in your report, I'm interested in finding out how were the victims of rape helped in terms of counseling, offering some medical assistance to them?
We have a number of service providers who are very active at the ground level to make sure that the victims are going to be supported, psychosocial support, but also health support. But I think we are still facing a number of challenges where the victims sometimes, because of stigmatization, are not always keen to go to see the medical actors and others, and it is really something that need to be changed, and it is really something where we have to make sure that all the victims should be supported, and it is important that all the community and the authorities should really encourage all the victims really to be assisted, so that they should not be threatened. And that's why it's really important to make sure that the victims are really supported, and those who are the responsible for their situation should be held accountable.
And now, looking at your report, covers mainly Central Equatorial Region. And how do you assess the human rights situation all over the country?
All over the country, I think it's important to note that since the signing of the peace agreement, we have really been able to confirm that there is a significant reduction of human rights violations and abuses. It is only in Central Equatoria where we are seeing a lot of issues, and this is also because there are people who have not signed the peace agreement, who are very active on the ground, like NAS, and it is important that they should be also be involved in the peace process, and they should really make sure that the cessation of hostility is signed. So basically, right now, if we are looking at the number of casualties that we have been able to observe, they are mainly more related to this what we call intercommunal violence, where I think it's more community-based militia who are very active in some areas. And the casualties are more based on this kind of violence rather than the conflict itself. Another issue that, of course, need to be addressed is how people are threatened and how people are sometimes arbitrarily arrested. And this is something that need to be addressed in a very coherent manner. Because at the end of the day, even if it is national security, they have to comply with the law. So whether they have some evidence and then they should brought the people who have been arrested, they should brought them before the court, or they don't have evidence, and in that case they should be released. But it is not acceptable to still hear that there are people who are threatened, who are arrested, who don't have the opportunity to appear in a due process, where it's even very difficult for them to see their lawyer, to see their family. This is something that needs to be changed. And I think if you are looking at the revitalized peace agreement, there was an agreement that people should be released, all the political prisoners, all the prisoners of war. And if it was done, it's not after that to start again arresting people for reasons that are not really known. So that's really something also of concern. But in overall, we have seen a lot of progress, but there is still a long way to go.
All right, and looking at the stigmatization of the victims of the rape is really a major problem, and I believe is maybe hampering the work of human rights. From your own point of view, how do you look at this issue of stigmatization, so that we have to eliminate, we have to fight it, such that the victims come up openly and they have to be assisted?
Yes, it's really important. So, but what for me is really missing at this point in time is that when we are talking about like sexual violence, it is as if the issue is only issues that are that has to be solved by the women and the girls themselves. We have to consider that this is really the issue of the entire society. And the entire society should be really involved in trying to find some concrete solution for this kind of abuses and violations. So sexual violence is it's a problem where all the actors, from the government, but also from community leaders, religious leaders, etc., have to play a very important role. I had the opportunity to meet the Minister of Gender early last week, and I was very pleased to hear that she has the same approach, where she would like also to see how we can really work and find some concrete solution to address some of the issues, not only conflict-related sexual violence, but also issue related to gender-based violence, like the issue of forced marriage, child marriage, etc. So I'm very pleased, and I think she was also focusing on the need to make sure that we can create more confidence between, for instance, the army and the civilian. And this I think it's very important to have that confidence. But the confidence, for me, will increase at the time when there is some violation that have been committed. We have to make sure that those who are involved will be held accountable. Because when there is a lack of accountability and there is a total impunity, people then will think that those who have committed that were supported by their leadership. So that's why it is important to make sure that anybody who is involved in any crime or any violation should be held accountable, because it's his or her individual responsibility, so that the entire institution, like the army or whatever, is not going to be responsible for the atrocities were committed by some of the elements. And they have to make sure that those elements are going to be left out or to be kicked out of the institution, so that the relationship, people will continue to trust their institution, like a very important institution like the army or the police.
Mr. Eugene Ndorera, thanks so much for your time. You have been a wonderful guest. And any final message to our listeners?
No, I think we just want to reiterate that UNMISS as a whole is here to support the government and the people of South Sudan to make sure that the situation in South Sudan will continue to improve. We are happy that this peace agreement has made some significant progress on the ground, but there are still a lot to be done. And I'm sure that even the implementation of the peace agreement is really key to have less violations on the ground. So it is important that all the political actors, all the parties to the conflict, it's important for them to make sure that one of their priority is the implementation of the peace agreement. And those who are not part of the peace agreement should also sit on the table and discuss, because at the end of the day, we should not accept the people or the civilian to be victims of political problems between some leaders. So that's really my last message. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Good.